Okay, so we already heard the inventor of D-Brains talking about why we're talking about the K-theory today. So I'm not qualified, neither able to try to talk about significance of a K-theory in physics, but let me simply say, roughly speaking, topological K-theory, that's what we're going to actually gonna be talking about, is some kind of a cohomological cohomology theory for vector bundles that emphasize the features that become prominent when the rank become large, okay, rank of the vector bundle. And it's actually a generalized cohomology theory in the sense that it satisfies all the so-called Eilenberg-Steenrod axiom except one, okay, that's the dimension axiom. So basically, what I'm going to do today is lay the foundation, namely talk about the basic stuff about vector bundles. We're quite open to suggestions from audience as to what kind of material and how the pace should be, so and today is the tryout. Okay. Roughly speaking, vector bundle is a parameterized family of vector spaces. And in our case, we'll always take our parameter space to be a manifold. And we require that the family varies continuously or smoothly. So that means that nearby vector spaces will be isomorphic. So this is what people often call local triviality. Let me draw a picture here. So this is our parameter space, and over each point of the parameter space, you have some vector space, and call it E of X. And then as the point theory, you get a bunch of such. So called the union of all such E, and the projection pi, so that's the usual notation here. And local triviality means that each point has a neighborhood so that the bundle looks like, okay, well, so let me write it here, that each point has a neighborhood such that the vector bundle looks like the trivial vector bundle. So depending on what kind of is the real vector space or complex vector space, you have a choice of RK and CK. And this local data is encoded by the so-called transition function. So, I'll explain that U alpha and U beta, and once again, depending on the real or complex, you have two possible choices here. So basically, you once again, let's draw a picture. So you have chosen an open cover U alpha, and so on the overlap of the open cover, the vector bundle looks like some trivial vector bundle, and on the overlap of on U alpha, it looks like a trivial vector bundle. On U beta, looks like another trivial bundle. So it's a little hard to draw here. The transition function describes how these two trivial bundles should be identified. Okay. Okay. So, as an example, let me look at the situation, a simple situation, but very interesting situation, when our manifold is a sphere. So for the sphere, you can divide the sphere up into two parts, the upper hemisphere and the lower hemisphere. In fact, actually, I should sort of extend each one of them a little bit over the equator. In the middle, they have the we have the lower dimensional sphere, Sn minus 1. And it is known that by the homotopy property of vector bundle, which we'll talk about later, that the part of the vector bundle over each of those pieces which are contractible will be trivial. So, and all the local data is concentrated on the transition between the upper part and lower part. So, so in this case, you can see that all vector bundles come from a function G. Into GL, so I'm reference to the field, either complex or real, and this function is called the Clutching function. So basically, what this function describes is that you have a trivial vector bundle on the upper hemisphere, and you have a trivial vector bundle on the lower hemisphere. And this function describes how you should glue those two trivial vector bundles together to make a vector bundle over the whole sphere. And this process is referred as a clutching construction.
I haven't heard this term before. Is this just applied to spheres or to any vector?
It applies to the following situation. Can be generalized to the following situation. Whenever you decompose your manifold into two pieces, and then you have trivial bundles over each of the individual pieces, and then you're trying to glue them, over the intersections, Okay, so that's vector bundles. Now I want to talk about operations on vector bundles. So there are some standard operations on vector bundles coming from the operation on vector spaces, but there's also one very important operation that's more specific to vector bundles versus vector spaces. Okay, so the first thing is so-called Whitney sum, how you add up two vector bundles. So if you have two vector bundles of the same parameter space, then you can take the so-called Whitney sum, meaning that if you think about this vector bundle as a parameterized vector spaces, and you have another vector bundle parameterized by the same parameter space, then you can do the parameter-wise direct sum. Okay, so and in terms of transition functions, you have the transition function for the Whitney sum is simply the log matrix given by the two transition functions. So you have similar operations, for example, for tensor products, by making parameterized wise operations of vector spaces and some more exterior products. So another thing will be the dual. So if you have a vector bundle, you can produce another vector bundle by taking the dual vector space for each parameter space, for each parameter point. So once again, it's parameter-wise dual. And in terms of a transition function, is so you take the original transition function transpose and then taking inverse. Okay. So
what does it mean to take a dual of your vector space and you dualize the vector space?
That's the space of all linear functions, linear functionals on the vector space. So in other words, so if you have a vector space, then the dual of vector space is the all linear functionals, real or complex, depending on
so very simple example. V is like RN.
Uh huh.
What's the V star?
It can be canonically identified with the Rn. So if V is Rn, then V star is also Rn. If you have some extra mathematicians distinguish the two, because usually there's no canonical identification between the two, but once you have some structure like an inner product or metric, then you can identify the two. Yeah. So
you might say V is column vectors and V star is row vectors.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's that's good. All right. Okay. So those are operations that's coming from operations of vector spaces. But now we have very important operation that's sort of unique to vector bundles, okay? So, and that's called pullback. And it's as follows. If you have a vector bundle over M, you can think of the, once again, think of this as a family of vector spaces parameterized by M. Now, suppose you have a continuous map or smooth map from another manifold to the parameter space M, then you can reparameterize this family using F. Okay? And this will give you a new family of vector spaces where the parameter space is changed. Is changed to be N, and this is called the pullback of the vector bundle E to N. Okay, let's see if I draw a picture here. And this is our N. So each point of N gets mapped over to a point f of x in M. And then you can look at the vector space corresponding to this guy. Okay. So you look at E of f of x. And this parameterization is our pullback vector bundle. Okay, so that's the so-called pullback operation. And in terms of the transition functions, is simply the original transition function composed with F. Okay, so we also write it as F star of G E.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, in the case of the tangent bundle to a manifold, and you have a smooth map between manifolds, I'm used to the fact that vectors get pushed forward and dual vectors or forms get pulled back. So you're saying, so if E was the tangent bundle of M, there is always a canonical pullback of the whole bundle. Not a particular cross section or something?
The cross section will be vector field that's defined along the image. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not vector fields that define over the whole target manifold.
Yeah, you can send the individual changing vector over to a target. However, if you got the vector field, changing vector field on the domain, you may not send it over to get the changing vector field on the target.
Because two points may, two different vector fields may send to the same vector field.
However, you can always just pull back the section to get the section on the pin.
I see. So you can pull back it, whether it's a vector or
the entire section.
But you're pulling back to the pullback bundle. The pullback bundle on N is not the tangent bundle of N.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
In fact, this whole theory could be done without the bases even being manifolds. They could be any spaces at all.
Topological. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So another thing that I should mention is about isomorphisms of vector bundles. And so in what sense we think two vector bundles are the same. And so we say that two vector bundles over the same manifold are isomorphic, and we use this notation if you can find roughly speaking, if you can find an n parameter worth of isomorphisms between each of the individual vector spaces that are parameterized by M. Okay, so in other words, if you can find a map from E to F such that restricted to each fibers, you have a linear isomorphism. So in terms of transition function, this means the following. Two vector bundles are isomorphic if and only if you can find a family of maps from the open set U alpha to the GL such that the two transition functions are related as follows. Okay, so so these lambda alphas are provided by this linear isomorphism from the parameter spaces to the parameter spaces.
When you say the lambda inverse, you mean the matrix inverse?
Matrix inverse. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we can introduce following notations, okay, so for each positive integer, you denote vec k of m as the set of isomorphism classes of vector bundles of rank k. Okay, I think I forgot to mention that the dimension of each fiber or each vector space is called the rank of the vector bundle. Okay, so so if you collect all isomorphism classes of a vector bundle of a fixed dimension over this manifold, and then you get a set and call it vec k of m. And in fact, depending on whether you specify real or complex, you're going to get two different sets. Okay, so sometimes we'll put superscript to indicate. Yes.
You get the same whether you consider smooth bundles or just continuous bundles. Or is that going to make any difference?
It's not going to make any difference, yeah. Okay. So if I write vec of m, that means we're going to collect together all possible isomorphism classes for all rank. All right, now, I'm ready for a very important property about vector bundles, the homotopy property for pullback.
Just very simple. So
yeah.
Vector of k for different k can't be isomorphic, right?
So let me state it as a theorem. Now we're going to assume our manifold is a compact manifold. And E is any vector bundle. Okay, so vector bundle over any other parameter space X. Okay, so it's a vector bundle over any manifold. Then if, let me use F. If you have a homotopy, in the sense that it's a continuous family of maps from M to X. Okay, then pulling back E by F0 is the same as pulling back E by F1. Okay. So pulling back by for maps that can be continuously deformed to another is the same. Okay. So I hope to indicate roughly why this is so. It's a little surprising if you haven't seen that. Okay, so so rough idea here is so first of all, local triviality means that nearby vector spaces are isomorphic. In this family, parameterized by X. So, and now, FT pulling back E means that we reparameterize using F of T, okay? So so you can imagine that starting from F0, if you just move a little bit, then all vector spaces will be moved just a little bit, so they will stay isomorphic, okay? And point-wisely, now, because we have the compactness, so you can make it uniformly for all t, so this makes it jump over from F0 to Ft for t sufficiently small, and then you go over all the way to F1. F T star E and F S star E are all nearby, so isomorphic. So this you have to do it pointwisely because that's a statement about pointwise vector spaces. But then we have the compactness, so that enables us to make the conclusion over the whole parameter space. Okay, so the compactness is important here. Okay, so now I'm going to deduce a couple of consequences of this homotopy property. So the first immediate consequence is that for very simple spaces, you can easily compute this guy if M is contractible. So contractible means that there is a there is a homotopy between the identity map and constant map. Okay. So and pull back by constant map is a trivial bundle. Okay. Because you reparameterize by a constant function. So the only thing here are trivial bundles, so they are given by the rank. Secondly, if F is a map between two manifolds and it's a so-called homotopy equivalent, then the pullback operation by F will give us bijection between isomorphism classes of vector bundles over N with isomorphism classes of vector bundles over M. So this is a bijection. In other words, if you want to classify vector bundles, it's only the homotopy type of the space is important. Okay. Another consequence of this is that the isomorphism class of clutching construction depends only on the homotopy class of the clutching function.
Can you give us some examples?
So down here, this is F star is the pullback, so is that back N into back M or vice versa?
You're right. So I switched my notation here. Sorry. Yeah. So it should be M to N. Let's use that to compute the isomorphism class of vector bundles over the sphere. That turns out to be given by the homotopy group of GL and C. Here we are talking about complex vector bundles.
So KC?
GL KC, yeah. Okay, thanks. That homotopy group is the same as the homotopy group of UK. Okay. So, so first of all, from the clutching construction, we see that all vector bundles on the sphere are constructed out of the out of a function from the equator of the sphere into GL KC. Okay, so that means, so we're looking at maps from SM minus 1 into GL KC. And any such map give us a vector bundle over the sphere. And so we will have an onto map here. This notation means that we're going to look at the homotopy class of maps. So we're going to look at the homotopy class of all maps from the one-dimensional lower sphere into GLKC. And so the this map give us isomorphic, homotopy equivalent maps give us isomorphic vector bundles. So so you have a, you actually have a map, have a map from this set of a homotopy class of maps into the set of isomorphism class of vector bundles on the sphere. And well, now is it one to one? So you can try to think whether it's one to one or not. And so that means that if you have two vector bundles that are isomorphic, what's going to happen to the clutching function, right? Well, according to the definition of isomorphism for the in terms of a transition function, the two should be related by the following relation, with lambda plus or minus maps from the upper or lower hemisphere into GL and KC. But the hemispheres are all contractible. GLKC is connected, or pathwise connected, so you can always homotopy these guys to the identity map. And so then you deduce that their clutching function must be homotopy to each other. So okay, so there's actually one little subtlety here in identifying this guy with that guy. So this is the so-called free homotopy class, and will arise when you define the homotopy groups. You are you have to fix a base point, but the base point issue here can be solved by adjusting the lambda plus or minus. You can sort of use it to switch any point to the base point. Okay, so that that I'm glossing over here. So this is the situation with complex vector bundle. The situation with real vector bundle is slightly more complicated because of the fact that GLKC is not, GLKR is not connected. So in this case, you get in some similar, but you have to quotient out by Z2, where this Z2 action is the action of two different components as conjugation. Okay, so that's the.
Z2 is outside, not inside. It's not okay,
my
Z2, but
it's outside. So here,
So there are two identical maps in the different components that you have to draw, not double count.
Let's see. You okay acts on itself by conjugation, if you are in the same component, then the action is the same, conjugation action is the same. But if you are in a different component, then you could end up with different things.
So if you did this with base point rather than freeway, you wouldn't have to put in Z2, is that right?
With the base point in what sense?
Well, pi n minus 1 OK, you're thinking of free?
No, this is the base point. This is the guy with the base point. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're putting in the base point and modding out by choice of the base point. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So you're not allowed to take two sort of different, pi, mapping an n minus 1 sphere into OK would in general be sort of two independent, maps of the two components of
there. There are two. Yeah.
Right. But yeah. So.
Too many.
So when you're defining the homotopy groups, you have some. Let's say you're fixing the south pole as your base point on a sphere, and you also fix some point x naught in the target manifold, and you always have to map the south pole onto this fixed base point. Yeah. So if you're in different component,
it might be worth pointing out that in the oriented case, you don't have to worry about the C2.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Case. Yeah. If you're in oriented case, then you always get an SOK. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know what is the interaction of the time. Suppose n is equal to 4, then pi 3 is equal to z, right? What in that case is the interaction on z?
S 4. Okay. Well, I don't know this answer. I think for k or odd, then the z2 action turns out to be trivial. So you don't have to worry about that. But somehow for k even, you have to worry about this z2 action. Okay. I hope to get to the last part, which is the classifying spaces. Okay, so the example of sphere leads us to try to look for a homotopy interpretation of isomorphism classes of vector bundles for other manifolds. And that's provided by using the so-called classifying spaces. So here we have to consider so-called the Grassmannian. I'm going to concentrate on the complex case, and the real case in this case is similar. So we denote GKCN to be the Grassmannian for all k-dimensional complex subspaces in CN. And so that's a homogeneous space. It's really UN quotient out by UK divided times U and minus K. Okay. So, on this space, the Grassmannian, there is a tautological rank K vector bundle. Okay. So that's denoted by gamma. K indicated rank K. So what this gamma is, well, for each point of the Grassmannian actually represent each point of the Grassmannian represent a k-dimensional subspace. So that will be equal to the k-dimensional subspace represented by X. Okay.
What's the word over there? First word is
tautological. Tautological, yeah. Or canonical, yeah. So something God given. well, it turns out that if you take n sufficiently large, so you have a lot of rooms to move around, then all vector bundles of rank k are pullback bundles of this guy. Okay, so this so once again, we're going to assume that we have a compact manifold. And K is some fixed positive integer. If you take n sufficiently large compared to k, every rank k vector bundles complex vector bundles, I should say. Is the pullback of gamma k. So that means i.e. for any vector bundle rank k, you can find the map from the underlying manifold to the Grassmannian, such that E is the pullback of gamma k by F. So this this map F is in some sense like the Gauss map for tangent bundles. If you embed the manifold into a big Euclidean space, well, actually there's a second part of the statement. Moreover. There is a one-to-one correspondence between complex vector bundles of rank k over n and the homotopy class of maps from m to g k c m. Okay. So I should one to one. That means okay. Similarly, for real vector bundles, then you get it into the real Grassmannian. If you take M to be sufficiently large. Well, the basic idea here, let me just sort of wave hand fashion. If the bundle is trivial, so you can think of a bundle as the manifold times CK, for example, then the let me sort of write an outline here. You have to construct another thing which sends the whole bundle into a big a Euclidean space or complex vector space. So you construct F hat, which sends the whole parameter worth of vector spaces into Cn, such that F restrict to each of the vector spaces will be a linear isomorphic will be linear and injective. Okay, so then you can define your map F from M to the Grassmannian by sending x to the image of the fiber on x So then that's a point, sorry, F hat here. And that's a k-dimensional space in Cn, okay? So that's the construction of this map. And construction of F hat, if the bundle is trivial, then you can simply use the projection. From M closed with CK onto CK, that will work. Now, if the bundle is a general vector bundle, then you decompose the manifold into pieces, and over each of the pieces, the vector bundle is trivial, and then you use some suitable cutoff so that you can define over each of the trivial pieces a map to projection, sort of projection into CK, and then you just take all those copies of CK corresponding to each of the pieces together. And so that gives you a huge, huge dimensional complex vector space.
It is like K times the number of neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so basically that will work, yeah, yeah. It's the set of homotopy classes or maps. So two maps are considered to be the same. So first of all, anything here, it's a map from M into the target space. And any two maps are considered to be the same if there's a continuous family of such, starting from one given to the other, ending with the other. Yeah. Yeah. So finally, if you don't want to worry about the taking n to be sufficiently large, then you can sort of take n to be infinity, and then that way you get a universal one for every possible rank, and this is the idea of infinite Grassmannian. So notice that you can naturally put these guys into the next level by embedding Cn into Cn plus 1 in an obvious fashion, and that gives you the so-called classifying space for this UK group, which in our case, it's the same as classifying space for GLKC. It's defined as a set, is simply the union of all GKs of CN, where N is sufficiently large. You don't have to specify how large it should be, because the nesting sequence here. But as a topology, it's as a topological space, it's defined as a direct limit, and this guy is called the classifying space. And so this is the thing that one size fits all, because now so you have this identification, and so I guess this is more or less what I wanted to talk about. I had some comments about the Bott periodicity of for stable homotopy groups of these classical groups, and but I think that the lecture notes can be put on the web, so I'll just let it stop here.